Okay, this week we're blessed with the opportunity to read Parshas Pahal Lo Sicha. And of course, Parshas Pahal Lo Sicha begins with the understanding and the mitzvah of Hadlakas Haneros. The Torah begins Pahal Lo Sicha as Haneros, and Rashi cites a famous medrash who notes that there is a connection between Parshas Pahal Lo Sicha and Parshas Naso, being based in Aaron HaKohen's distressed over not being able to bring one of the Karbanos HaNasiim. The Midrash goes on to tell us HaKadosh Baruch Hu consoled him by telling him, Shelcha gedola mishelahem, yours is greater than the Nisiyim, Sha'ata madlik umetiv es haneros, because you're going to be able to light and be mative the candles. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's Hatzal explains that the symbolism of Hatava is dual. On the one hand, Hatava Saneros refers to a readiness to roll up one's sleeves and apply oneself to a goal. At the same time, there is an emotional ability to invest today to harvest the fruits tomorrow. And sometimes tomorrow occurs much later than the following day. That is to say, when you are Madlik Neros, you get the benefit right away. When you're Meitiv Es HaNeros, you hold out. You clean today, and you hope to get the benefit tomorrow. The Hatava aspect, says Rav Aaron, need not diminish the daily enjoyment that accompanies every Ben Torah as he deciphers a particular point in the context of learning. In the context of learning, a person also has to be begeder madlik umetiv. Enjoyment that begins with Hatava, with the journey of learning, will reach the stage of Hadlaka with the Maskana. The combination of effort that bears long-term fruit with experiential learning providing short-term enjoyment is particularly meritorious when we're dealing with near Limud HaTorah. In short, Rav Aaron is pointing out that Limud HaTorah parallels the process of Madlik Umetiv Es Haneros. Sometimes we are in a Hatava stage, we're being Miyageya, we're putting in the efforts, and the benefit of those efforts is only seen down the road. Sometimes we get the efforts of being in the road. Reminds me often, I had one of my phenomenal rebbeim in yeshiva was well known for being able to say shiurim that are oker es ha'arim, that really we used to call them, they lit up the night. But on the other side of it, there were days that he used to sit down and just read for days on end. And when one got to the end of one of those light up the night shiurim, one realized that you could not have said such a shiur unless you had understood the three shiurim prior, which were really just processes of the Rebbe reading, in order for us to realize that had we read it, we would not have seen it the same way. Shelcha gedola mishelahem. Sometimes in life we think to ourselves, it's only the scholar in residence, it's only the person who shows up to give the special shiur that is deserving of the respect and the kavod. But the truth of the matter is, it's the guy who turns around and is leading the shiur every single day. It's the guy who comes to daven every single day. It's the guy who puts in the effort every single day to sit and learn. Those are the aspects of learning that really lead to the pure enjoyment of that which is Limud HaTorah. By asking Aaron, so the Torah tells us that Aaron HaKohen preceded. And Rashi again cites the Sifri, who notes the praise of Aaron, Malame Tshvachu Shaloshina. He never changed the effort he put into lighting the menorah. My dear Chavrusa, Nesano Milstein has a grandfather, Rabbi Elazar Kano. Rabbi Kano was one of the Rashi Yeshiva in Torah Vedas. Rav Kahano points out that the uniqueness of Aaron to the concept of Shaloshina is crucial. Often we think that in order for people to live with a certain ideal, they have to make differentiation. So the individual who lives by a particular style of thinking will sell out the reality in order for it to match his theory. And sometimes when a person says that he is the great compromiser, that there's no need for him to stick to his ideals because his ideal is compromise. Rabbi Elazar Kano points out that Aaron HaKohen embodied the idea of Malame Tshvachu Shaloshina. Aaron was an Oy Shalom for Odei Shalom, and yet at the same time did not compromise on his ideals in order to get to the stage of being Matol Shalom Beinish Lishto. There are times that people disagree. That's okay. It's the way that we disagree that makes a difference. A Jew has to always try to achieve Shalom, yes, but in the context of trying to achieve that shalom, he also has the responsibility to make sure that he doesn't sell out being a Jew in the process. Later in the parasha, we read about the concept of Pesach Sheni. And the section of Pesach Sheni has to be pointed out as a strange one. It's hard to understand the whole context that brought about Pesach Sheni, when people who were Tamei Lenefesh turned around and said, Lama Nigara. This, if the claim of Lama Nigara, why should we lose out, is a fair question to ask, then the answer is very clear. You are Tamei, and someone who's Tamei can't bring a carbon. So how is it that they thought that such a question would be acceptable to Moshe Rabbeinu? So the great Gaon and Rosh Yeshiva, the Tzaddik Rav Chaim Sabato Shalita, answers based on Rav Tzaddik HaKohen of Lublin. Says Rav Chaim Sabato, in the name of Rav Tzaddik, the question of Lama Nigara leads to Pesach Sheni, because Pesach Sheni is a second chance at joining in the mitzvah that made Am Yisrael into a nation. The one who recognizes the Mesiras Nefesh of the original declaration doesn't want to lose out the chance to reclaim it. Recognizing that they were no less a part of the past brings a person the chance to realize that not his right, as much as his responsibility, to rendezvous with Hashem and stand up and be counted via the process of offering a Karban Pesach. This was really why Pesach Sheni was there. The idea of bringing a Karban Pesach is so central and so essential to the future of Am Yisrael, to the stand-up and being counted part of Am Yisrael, that the claim of Lama Nigara was a fair one, and the hope and the dream that in the context of offering Lama Nigara, that the Jew would be ready to handle the answer and make sure that he too would stand up and be counted. Then the parasha takes its turn, and we find ourselves saying, Vayehi ben Tzoa ha'aron vayomer Moshe. When the arrow moved, Moshe said, Kuma Hashem. And that, when it rested, he said, Shuva Hashem. And the question has to be asked, why is there a different terminology between Kuma Hashem and Shuva Hashem Revavos Alpha Yisrael? It seems sort of strange. Sir Mordechai Yehuda Zaks, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, explains that when Bnei Yisrael rested in the Midbar, one might look at them and think that they were a bunch of disparate groups. After all, each Shevet had its own leader, it had its own flag, it looked like a meeting of the United Nations when they camped. And in that process, says Rav Zaks, Achdus Yisrael was not apparent. However, when the Aron moved, everyone moved behind the Aron in a single direction, Me'achore Ha'aron, towards the same idea with a common Oyev, those who are Sonei Hashem, and hence the single word Oyevecha, which is a description of the Oyevim of Bnei Yisrael. And then when that happens, we have what to go and places to focus our energies. Later on, we're told by Yom Kimisonim, when the nation started to complain, and a second complaint came through, that the Asafsuf had a desire. And they asked the question, Mi achilenu basar, who's going to eat if feed us meat? And Rashi comments that although the people had meat, they worried. Because when you want to complain about something, there's always something to say. However, the truth of the matter is that Sheker ain la raglayim. Sheker has no place. And so if they had meat, after all, when they came into, we're going to read in Parashas Matos Masei about the Mekne Rav, about all the cattle that was left for Reuven and Gad. And so there was a basis for meat. Shashach that animal. Why are you turning around and asking me that Yachilenu Basar? And since it's so obvious that there was meat and that there was no basis for a cry, why is it that the complaint had any traction among the Jewish people? So Rav Yaakov Moshe Harlap, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the grandfather of one of my Rebbeim, Rav Zvulun Harlap, should continue to be well, Shalita, explained, Rav Yaakov Moshe explained, that when people are drunk on desire, then logic gets thrown out the window. Because when people desire something, the lack of quenching of that desire means there is not enough, or even something is not present at all. Even the craziest thoughts reign when what drives them is more emotional desire than logical explanation. It's just a desire to be felt, and that desire is insatiable. And so by definition, you can have all the cows in the world. If you have a desire, a taiva, for meat, then all the cows in the world are not going to suffice for it. And so says Rav Yaakov Moshe Chalap, there was traction, it was just an emotional traction, which took the logic and threw it out the window. Moshe Rabbeinu heard the nation, Bocha l'mishpachosav. And the Torah tells us, Vayichar la Hashem ma'od u'beinei Moshe ra, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very angry, and it was bad in the eyes of Moshe. So what was gained? Once we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu is angry, what's gained by knowing that Moshe was angry as well? And moreover, one would think that Moshe's anger carried more weight. Would one actually assume that Moshe Rabbeinu's anger carried more weight than that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself? So the Ger Rebbe, the Beis Yisrael, explains that after Chet HaEgel, Moshe moved out of the camp. And Rashi noted that Hashem told him that if I'm angry and you're angry, who's going to be Mekarev B'nei Yisrael? And the Beis Yisrael explains that Moshe's anger reminded HaKadosh Baruch Hu that somebody needs to be that Mekarev, and it wasn't going to be Moshe, it was going to have to be Hashem. And so once again in this situation when Moshe Rabbeinu got to the point to B'nei Moshe Ra, Moshe Rabbeinu understood that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to have to be the one who is going to allow some sort of calming of his own anger in the process. Finally, on the parsha, we're told that Miriam had her episode of tzaras, and the Rambam in Hilchos Tumas Tzaras at the end offers a very strong, long explanation as to how Miriam was able to engage in lashon hara and why she was punished. And Rav Meir Twersky Shalita noted that the Rambam's progression from a frivolous idle chatter to heresy is sobering. He explains that constant idle chatter is not simply a self-contained waste of time. When a person engages in mindless chit-chat, it lowers the person, which makes him petty and hungry for gossip. And when he habitually indulges the inclinations for pettiness and gossip, he becomes a cynical person. And this is the inevitable result of engaging in lashon hara, whereby one focuses on the faults and negatives within a fellow Jew. So speaking lashon hara bespeaks a cynical decision to focus on another Jew's faults and ignore his virtues. Ergo, says Rabbi Twersky, the insidious process continues to unfold. Initially, one's cynicism manifests itself only in regard to the neighbors and acquaintances. But cynicism grows, and it engulfs the attitude. And so then it grows to the tzaddikim, and ultimately to the neviim, and then even to HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. And so therefore, cynicism, by definition, is the antithesis of faith. Our actions and speech reverberate. Whatever we say or do has to be calibrated. And one has to understand that in regard to who we are and what we are always, quote, on. The Haftorah tells us that in the context of the Haftorah, we're told, Al Evan Acha Shiva Inayim. Mori Rabbi used this pasuk once to explain an important question. Sometimes it happens in life that we find the use of a pasuk in a context that is not in the way that it was intended. So Mori Rabbi explained that the story happened with the Marival, who was blind in one eye and was resting on a stone with three of his students. So one of the students turned to the Marival and quoted to the Rebbe that he felt that this was Al Derech Hatzachus, Akiyam of the Pasuk of Alevan Achas Sheva Inayim. On one stone there were seven eyes, the idea being the three of the students having six and the Rebbe's being a seventh. When things are Amalitza, there's room to offer a novel example, a novel interpretation. And in those contexts, a person doesn't have to be concerned that that novel interpretation will be anything other than a melitza, an exciting idea getting one to really think about what things mean, and not chalila, a opportunity for future kfira. We live in a time where divrei Torah get taken out of context. Divrei Torah and people who represent Torah sometimes get quoted inappropriately. A person needs to stop and think what was really meant by a comment that was there. And Be'ezus Hashem, it should lead to shalom, and for you and me, a Shabbat shalom.